Welcome to the Doggy Dojo. I'm your host, Susan Light, a Los Angeles-based dog trainer on a quest to become worthy of the title Sensei of the Doggy Dojo. Today we're talking about adolescent dogs. This is a really tough age for a lot of dogs and their humans to navigate. So we're going to hope to help by defining it, explaining what's happening to your dog, and giving you some tips to survive it. My guest holds several certifications, including Karen Pryor Academy Certified Training Partner, Applied Animal Behavior Certification from the University of Washington, and is completing her Master of Science in Clinical Animal Behavior at the University of Edinburgh. She is dedicated to using the most effective and humane methods to create behavior change at both ends of the leash. One of her special interests is juvenile and adolescent dog behavior and development. Please welcome Sammy J. Hyde. Welcome to the podcast, Sammy. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I'm super excited to talk about adolescent dogs because before I was a trainer, this was just not a phase of a dog's life that ever occurred to me. And now I have so many adolescent dog clients.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I had a similar experience when I started dog training. And I realized we kind of talk about dog development like they're puppies and then they're adults.
Yeah.
And I think it's really kind of the norm that we forget or maybe don't even know that there is this whole adolescent period.
I think everyone blocks it out because the number of owners that have told me, I never had a dog that was like this. I never had a dog that went through this. I think we just all collectively forget about it during the 8, 9, 10 amazing adult years that we get with our dogs.
I think that could certainly be the case. I feel like maybe some of us even have a similar experience with their own human adolescent period. Like, I think I've blocked out some of that time of my life.
I think that's probably healthy for everybody.
Yes.
So before we get too far in it, can you define adolescence?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question because adolescence, I think one of the reasons that the adolescent period gets overlooked is because it actually is poorly researched in dogs.
It's super hard to define for me.
Yeah. So typically when you look at most of the literature, we typically define it as the period from about 6 months or the start of puberty, right? Mm-hmm. As they start to sexually mature up till the end of sexual maturity, which can be depending on the dog or the breed. It can be anywhere between like 18 months to 2 years. There's even some evidence that giant breeds might even go as far as 3 years.
Wow.
So typically we're saying around 6 months up until they are physically mature.
Yeah, that's how I've usually said is about 6 months to a year and a half. But yeah, it's hard to define. And then how does them being altered affect that? Because when we're talking about sexual maturity, and then we're altering these dogs usually in the middle of that somewhere. How does that affect it if we fix them, so to speak?
That is like a million-dollar question. And we have some information on this. One thing to note about the adolescent period is that because it's so poorly researched in domestic dogs, a lot of our understanding comes from other species, or it's just plain anecdotal. But there are some things that we do know when it comes to adolescence for an intact versus a altered dog. So if your dog is spayed or neutered, one, it kind of depends on the timing. But typically the things we'll see is that like male dogs may not engage in as much marking. You might not see them urine marking as much. Typically neutering a male dog tends to reduce mounting as well as roaming behavior. So roaming we kind of define as dogs who are covering large distances and spaces throughout the day. Kind of just, you can maybe assume they're looking for some ladies. And so we know that neutering male dogs does reduce those things.
Who's letting their dogs roam?
So that actually, so... Yeah. So some of those studies come from comparing things like domestic dogs who are pets versus like free living dogs.
Okay.
So we see in free living dogs who are usually intact, that they do male dogs during adolescence, they engage in a lot of roaming. They're now moving about in much larger spaces. They have a much larger area that they cover, typically their daily behavior.
Interesting. And I'm sure that you probably don't have a satisfactory answer to this. I get asked this question all the time. I always say there's just no one's really done a good study about how altering an animal, especially they seem to think males, really affects their behavior.
Yeah.
Beyond that, you know?
That is definitely something that I think a lot of what we quote unquote know about adolescent dogs is anecdotal. Mm-hmm. There is some, you know, there is some understanding that there is the hormone changes are going to affect behavior. So because a altered dog, a spayed or neutered dog is not going to necessarily, and especially depending on the timing, if you have like a pediatric spay or neuter, they're not going to be subject to the same hormone changes during puberty. But we can take an educated guess that a lot of the development in the brain will be fairly similar, but you're right that there's really not a study. And it's something that, I mean, there's a huge question there of, does it really change our dog's behavior? Anecdotally, it's hard to say from my perspective because I work with pet dogs. Most of them are spayed or neutered, right? Yeah.
But I feel like vets are pushing people to alter their dogs later and later. So I remember it used to be 4 to 6 months, you know, you were taking them, you were getting them fixed. And now almost all of the people are saying, wait until they're at least a year, wait until their growth peaks close, wait until, you know, adolescence is past. Now we're having year and a half, 2 year old dogs before they're getting altered.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that push is coming from evidence that's starting to come out now, because pediatric spay or neuter, you know, was more popular in the last 10 years. And some of this is a push for population control, right?
Right.
We are starting to see more evidence now that there are, you know, there are costs and there are downsides to spay and neutering your dogs that young. And I think that's where a lot of that push is coming from, is that we're seeing that it maybe does affect their health in ways that we really don't want. And if waiting, you know, 6 months to a year to spay or neuter can offset those possible health risks, then it's probably worth it.
Yeah. But then behaviorally, does that make this adolescence so much more difficult?
I'll say that I have worked with clients who have intact dogs. I don't know if it makes it more difficult. I think that adolescence, and I think we'll talk a lot about the behavioral changes and some of the typical stuff that we see. And I see this across the board, whether a dog is intact or not. I don't necessarily think it overall makes it more difficult. But if to you, having a dog who urine marks or humps other dogs, or maybe cannot be off leash because they are prone to taking off, right? That roaming behavior. If that is going to make your life a lot more difficult, then having an intact male might be a lot more difficult. If going through heat cycles with a female dog is something that you're not open to and up to and is going to make your life a lot more difficult, then yeah, having the intact female might be a lot more difficult for you.
Yeah, definitely. So what is physically happening to the dog during adolescence? I mean, sexual maturity, yes, but like, I also feel like they're noticing more things. So the environment becomes more interesting to them. What do we know is happening to them?
So something that we know happens in quite a few species, when we've looked at adolescents, and I think something that is really important to consider with our adolescent dogs, is that the part of the brain that responds to stress, and I want to be clear here that when I say stress, I mean physiological stress. So what I mean is an increase in arousal, whether that be, oh my gosh, there's a bird, I'm super excited, I want to chase it, or oh my God, a garbage truck made a loud noise next to me and scared me. Those are both physiological arousal. And physiological arousal is like the body preparing to act. And so the part of the brain that responds to stress is more sensitive during adolescence. So take the example of the garbage truck making a loud noise. An adult dog is going to have an initial peak in stress response in this area of the brain. To simplify this, you have like this big peak. If we're looking at a graph, it peaks really high, right? That initial startle, you're like, oh my gosh. And then over a period of time, your stress level gradually comes down. If you were to compare that to the adolescent animal, and these studies haven't been done on dogs, but comparative species, that initial spike in adolescence tends to be higher. They have a higher initial stress response. And then, really importantly, they come down slower. So it's a lot more gradual return to baseline. And so I think that this is something that, again, we know is happening in the brain in a lot of comparative species. And it's something to consider. If that is the experience of our pet dogs, then this might be something to consider when we look at some of the common behaviors we see anecdotally with pet dogs. One of the things that a lot of people say is when their dog hit adolescence, they became really reactive, right? Mm-hmm. My dog is barking and lunging at things more. Mm-hmm. Well, if this part of the brain that's overactive is happening in your adolescent pet dog, if they're having these experiences, then yeah, maybe when they were younger and a puppy, they didn't bark at a plastic bag floating around in the wind.
Yeah.
But now, when they see that, like when they were a puppy, maybe they had a response because they were like, oh, that's weird. And then they were like, okay, it's fine. And they came down from that initial stressor. But with an adolescent dog, that higher sensitivity might put them over threshold. And they're like, I got to bark at that thing. That thing is really scary. And then the other thing to consider, something we talk a lot about when we are for dog trainers, especially dog trainers who work with behavior issues, we talk about trigger stacking. Mm-hmm. Trigger stacking is when multiple stressful events happen basically in too close, like temporal proximity. So like a time frame, like they happen too close together in a short period of time. And so it kind of stacks on top of each other. And I think of it like you wake up in the morning and you go to make your coffee and your coffee maker's broken. And you're like, oh. And then you go to get in your car to go work and there's you have a flat tire. And then you decide to stop at Dunkin' Donuts and get yourself a coffee since your coffee maker was broken. And then you spill the coffee on your lap. And all those things happen in close proximity to each other. And you get to work and your boss goes, hey, did you get me that paper yet? And you explode, right? Like you have a big overreaction. Maybe you yell at him. Maybe you get super stressed out. And I don't know, maybe you go to the bathroom and cry. Whatever it is that's your reaction to that situation, you may react differently than you would have on a normal day because of that trigger stacking. Now, if we think back to what I said about how the part of the brain that responds to stress in adolescence, you have that initial really high peak and then you come down a lot slower. So it takes you longer to get to your baseline, more prone to trigger stacking if that's the case.
Yeah.
And I know personally, this is something that I see a lot with my adolescent clients and it's always notable. And I always know that this is what we're looking at when I ask them to think about, or maybe even track, you know, what their dog's behavior was like on walks, you know, for 1 week. And then we look at it and we realize, oh my gosh, yeah, all the times my dog is barking and lunging, it's at the end of the walk. And usually these are instances, I think the other thing that's really characteristic about this is there doesn't seem to be one specific trigger.
Yeah.
Right. Like the clients will always say, I don't know what it, he just barks and lunges at like everything.
Right.
And
sometimes it's this, sometimes it's that.
Yeah. And that's that trigger stacking. Just like with your boss asking you if you'd gotten that paper to them yet. On a normal day, maybe that doesn't stress you out, doesn't put you over threshold, not a big deal. But if you just had a terrible morning and a bunch of terrible, stressful things happen to you, you might behave differently.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So is that the major physical thing that's happening? Because I want to move on to like behaviorally what's going on because of these things, but I don't want to skip if there's more physical things.
I mean, I think, again, I'm not a vet, so I don't want to go too far into the medical side. But I mean, there are some common things. So just like with humans, adolescent dogs tend to go through kind of like physical growth spurts that may or may not cause pain. They may or may not be uncomfortable. They also tend to have like go through coat changes. People with double coated dogs might notice this. But I think the most important thing for the average pet owner, especially because the average pet owner typically spay or neuter dog, if we're talking about training the physical thing that's going to be affecting behavior that we have some good evidence about, is that part of the brain for adolescent animals that controls that stress response. There also is some evidence in, especially in humans, that the part of the brain that we sometimes call like the reward system is a little overactive, for lack of a better description, which can lead them to seek out rewards more. This kind of ties into risky behavior, right? I think a lot of people have heard adolescents are prone to risky behavior. You might look back on your own adolescence and think, I was doing a lot of dumb things. But it also can mean that rewards are more valuable or have a stronger effect on learning, again, because the reward system is acting differently during adolescence.
That's awesome. I had never really thought about it that way. Does this also create sort of when people are like, my dog's just manic, just like, to me, that's overstimulated, right? Is that also something that dogs in adolescence are prone to?
I would say that we tend to see, and again, kind of tying to the reward system, typically, you can almost think of it like, I often use the term like big feelings. I think a lot of dog trainers use that. Adolescents, yeah, they do seem to have big feelings. And that's on both sides of the spectrum. Again, whether we're talking like emotionally negative or positive experiences, whether you're super stressed or super excited, they seem to often fall on the extremes of that spectrum. So I tend to be either super scared or super excited. And I think that might be where a lot of people say, oh my gosh, my adolescent is crazy. He's never calm. They're not ever really spending much time in that sort of neutral area in the middle emotionally. There is some evidence about emotional instability in humans. Adolescence. Again, this is one of the things that I love about adolescent dogs, actually. And it's the reason I got really interested in them early on in my career, because I was like, there's like no research on this. Like I have so many questions and there's like very few answers. And I'm the type of person who I don't like unsolved mysteries. I cannot watch the History Channel, those like mystery shows or historical shows where they talk about a historical event and they're like, we think this happened, but we'll never know. And I'm like, no, I can't accept that answer. I want to know. And so this sort of sent me down that route. And there's a lot that we still don't know, which I think is exciting because it means there's a lot to be researched and there's a lot of answers to be found. I would say that when it comes to the brain, the big things that we might want to consider with our adolescent dogs based off research in other species is that stress response that is going to look different, right? They're going to be more sensitive, and that their response to rewards is going to be different.
We're going to take a quick break, but you can find Sammy on Instagram at Sammy J. Hyde, SammyJHyde, Sammy J. Hyde, or reach out and request her through the Pet Republic. Their site is powertothepet.com, and I've linked both in the show notes. We'll be right back. So knowing that, what should our goals be for our adolescent dogs during this, you know, about roughly, let's say, a year of adolescence that you're going to be dealing with?
Yeah. So I think one of the most important things to stress for pet owners is continued high quality socialization. Mm-hmm. This is one of the places where we do have evidence that dogs who receive poor or less socialization during adolescence are also prone to behavior issues the same way that we think of puppies, right? We all know the socialization period. Good God, is there so much information out there about the socialization period, which interestingly is mostly based off like a handful of studies and hasn't really been addressed or looked at much since like the 50s, 60s. There are a couple of really like hallmark studies that a lot of that information comes from, but we also have actually some more modern studies that have looked at experiences during adolescence. And while this critical social period, that period from like 3 weeks to about like 12 or 14 weeks, is still really important. It should be focused on. It's important that owners don't go, okay, well, now, you know, you're 14 weeks, the social critical period's over, we don't have to do anything anymore. It is still really important that they be exposed to a variety of environments and people and dogs. And I really want to stress high quality. These should be exposures where the dog is calm and comfortable and having a good time, the same way you would with a puppy. Socialization should always be about the dog's experience, and not the environment, right? I can't just throw my dog in the car and call it socialization. I want to make sure that going in the car is a positive experience for them. There's also evidence that stress during adolescence can have long-term effects on animals. In dogs, we have some evidence that really stressful experiences during adolescence can actually have a long-term impact on adult behavior. So we really want to make sure that we are reducing stress and that we are continuing to expose them to the world. And again, focus on how the dog is feeling. Observe them, look at them, focus on how your dog is behaving to make sure that they're having a positive experience. The other thing that I always tell pet owners who have adolescent dogs is now is not the time to slack on management.
Amen.
I know it's so hard because like the puppy period is, I mean, it's rough. Let's be real. Puppies are a lot of work. They're baby animals. Any baby animal is a lot of work. And we're tired. And when you hit 6 months, a lot of owners are like, thank goodness we got past the puppy period. It's all uphill from here. Let's remove the gates, remove the tethers. We're like, you know, I don't have to watch my dog as much anymore. Let them run free. It's all over. But during the adolescent period, dogs are prone to increased foraging and scavenging, which in pet dog world looks a lot like counter surfing and trash picking. And when you remove those gates and you take your eyes off your dog, they're going to engage in those behaviors. And you know where you forage food in a pet household? Counters and trash cans. They also tend to engage in more exploration. You can kind of think about this like any adolescent animal. This is the time when they would be moving out and exploring the world more anyways. For canids, this is the time where you've got to learn to scavenge and hunt on your own, right? So they are going to be really interested exploring their environment. I always tell people that be careful with your home environment, because that basket of shoes at the front door that maybe your puppy wasn't super interested, once they hit the adolescence, they might be a little bit more interested in, because again, they're interested in exploring their environments a lot more. And again, that scavenging, they're scavenging around your home, and maybe they happen to go towards the front door and notice that basket of shoes, and then they might decide, hey, this looks like a good thing to chew on, which is also a behavior that actually increases during adolescence. We see a lot more chewing.
Interesting.
I've actually heard people describe it as the second teething stage. Obviously, at this point, your dog's adult teeth are fully in. So it's not necessarily has to do with, you know, the same type of teething that you would see as a puppy. I've heard some people say that the reason it happens, the reason we see increased chewing during adolescence, is because the adult teeth are settling in the jaw. I haven't found any evidence about that. I don't really know where that comes from, but we do see an increase in chewing. And so again, your dog might, you might have this small period between the puppy stage, like the juvenile stage and adolescence, where they seem like they're chewing less, and then they suddenly start chewing on stuff again. So really, management is key. And the reason it's so important is because if counter surfing and trash picking and chewing on shoes sounds annoying to you, you need to prevent rehearsal of that behavior, because we know that behaviors that get rehearsed often are behaviors that are likely to be repeated. And I always tell people, you know, we can do lots of good training with your adolescent dog, but it's a game of tug of war, right? If on one side of that rope is your dog gets to practice chewing on your shoes and that feels super good and that's super fun for them. And then on the other side, we're trying to train them to, you know, we're trying to use training to encourage alternative behaviors. If you keep letting them have the opportunity to chew on the things you don't want them to chew on, then we're tugging on that side of the rope, right? And then you go to train and you tug on the other side, you won't get very far. So yeah, it's really critical with training that if we are trying to show our dogs, please do this behavior instead, you've got to set up the environment so they can't rehearse the behavior that you don't want.
Yeah. There's two other things that I don't know, you may be about to mention, but I want to make sure that we mention it before we run out of time is, you know, you're mentioning a lot more chewing. And for me, that sounds like we need to be working on that, what I call category of enrichment that's soothing, right? Chewing, licking, sniffing.
Yes.
Relaxes the dogs, which when you're saying like, oh, they're more prone to stress, they're more prone to overexcitement, like no wonder they're seeking out things to chew to calm themselves down to feel better. So I want to make sure we're pointing out that just like you said, management's one prong to go with training. Enrichment is another prong that we want to make sure we're giving them those opportunities to do those behaviors in a healthy way.
Oh, yeah. And that is, I mean, like I usually have a hallmark of five things that I like to cover with dog owners, and enrichment and is a huge part of it for so many reasons, including you mentioning that it is a good stress relief. And I, as I said earlier, an important part of adolescence, I want you to reduce stress for your dog. They are really sensitive to stress at this age, which can cause more frustration for both of you. But also, again, it can have long-term effects. So any sort of enrichment that helps reduce stress. I love sniffing activities. I cannot tell you when my dog was an adolescent, how many times I came home from work, took her cup of dinner, right, her cup of kibble, and I went into the backyard and scattered it in the grass. And I just had her sniff for her kibble because sniffing is really calming. We actually have evidence that's physiologically calming. It can significantly reduce things like heart rate, blood pressure. Chewing is super fun. And again, if they're going to engage in chewing, have them do it with chew toys and things like bully sticks. Or I really like, there's a brand that makes something called like a no-hide chew. Give them those outlets of appropriate things to chew on. Licking is also nice and soothing. So when I have an adolescent dog in my house, I am telling you the freezer is full of nothing but like playmats and Kongs and topples and all kinds of like rubber toys, silicone toys that I can put some wet food in, put some, you know, peanut butter. In fact, my husband often knows when a young dog is coming to stay with us because suddenly there'll be no human food in the freezer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's so, so important and often overlooked. We need to get ahead of those needs because these are needs that they have, basically.
Yeah. And also adolescents tend to be busybodies. They tend to require more physical and mental enrichment than any other time in the dog's development. And so I always encourage people to make sure that, honestly, if you don't think you're doing too much, then you probably could do more because they're really active at this age. So give them a variety of enrichment items so that you can work out their mental energy and not just their physical. Because one thing that I see a lot of adolescent dog owners do is try to reduce unwanted behavior by exhausting the dog through physical exercise. And it's something I always caution owners against. It can feel really great to send your dog to daycare all day or take them for a 3-hour hike and then come home and they sleep all day, right? They sleep for like a full 12-hour period, knocked out, dead to the world. And you get this, it's reinforcing. You get this moment of like, oh, relief. It feels so good. They're quiet. And so then you do that more and more. But number one, an exhausted dog is not necessarily a happy dog. I don't think I am ever my happiest when I'm exhausted. Usually I'm just exhausted. Like emotionally, I'm pretty flat. because I'm so physically exhausted. The other thing is, and maybe this will motivate some people, even if, you know, the an exhausted dog's not necessarily a happy dog, even if that doesn't resonate with you, think about it this way. Your dog is at the time in their life when they are very physically active. They're young, they're strong, they're healthy. You take your dog for like a 2-hour hike in the morning, right? Or maybe you take them for a run in the morning to try to exhaust them. And it works. And you do that for like a week. Say you take them for like a 45-minute run. And I should throw in a caveat, be careful with high impact sports with adolescents. We want to be careful and not do in high impact sports until their growth plates close. But say you're using exercise to exhaust your dog. You're probably, at some point, they're going to build up enough endurance that that amount of exercise isn't enough to exhaust them, to get them to that sedated point that you wanted. So now, maybe instead of 2 hours in the morning, you have to go for 3 hours. And maybe that works for a little bit. But then they build even more endurance. And now 3 hours isn't enough to exhaust them. And if you're not careful, you will just, I mean, not necessarily bad, build your dog's fitness. But now you have built a dog who requires a really high level of physical exercise that you might not want to maintain for the rest of your life. So use both physical and mental enrichment to make sure that your dog is content, but be careful of falling into that trap of sedating your dog through excess physical exercise.
I love that. Yes, I always say try not to create an athlete that you can't keep up with, because that's exactly how conditioning works. We don't think about it. But it's like, you get stronger and stronger and can go further and further, or, you know, lift more and more. I love that you said that. And then the exhausted dog is not a happy dog. Absolutely. But I do. The last thing I wanted to make sure we touch on before we sign off, and we're about to go over time, is sleep.
Yes.
Your dog at this age probably needs more sleep than it's getting.
Yeah. And I think this is something that I'm seeing more now, because more people are working from home.
Yeah.
And more people are spending more and more time at home with their dogs. And I'm seeing it with adolescents and also puppies, that they're not sleeping enough. So yes, just like human adolescents, we actually know a lot in human adolescents how a lack of sleep affects their brain. And if your dog is not getting enough sleep, likely they're going to engage in more of those undesirable behaviors that you don't like. Things like, again, their stress responses are going to be higher, right? Mm-hmm. One thing that we didn't really touch on, but really quickly, there is evidence that adolescent dogs do struggle with attention. So sustained attention on an activity. This is something we know in other adolescents too, but this is probably,
I can anecdotally back that up.
Yeah. How many adolescent owners have said to you, he doesn't know, he like forgot everything. He forgot all of his behaviors. He never recalls anymore. He doesn't respond to his name. Yeah. And a part of that, like, we have seen that they do struggle with attention. And that's going to be even worse if they haven't gotten enough sleep. So using those calming enrichments a couple times a day to make sure that your dog is having some downtime can be really effective. And I will tell you that if you can get into a good routine of it, one of the ways that when my dog was an adolescent, I would have her, we'd go outside, we'd do some training or do some physical enrichment or something, or mental exercise, and then put her in her crate or a pen or, you know, a safe area where she can't get into mischief, and give her something like a frozen Kong, and 10, 15 minutes of licking, we've now relaxed. Your dog will be in a better state where they may be better able to take a nap, even with you being home. I think us being home a lot has made it harder for our dogs to sleep. It's something I'm seeing with puppies even as well, not just adolescents.
Yeah. Well, we are out of time, but is there anything else you want to make sure that you got a chance to say before we sign off?
I think the two big things that I tell adolescent owners that I think can be the most impactful on your life and your relationship with your adolescent dog is, number one, when it comes to training, focus on the basics, focus on really good foundations. we've talked about a lot of things here. And you, if you think about all the stuff we've talked about, you can see where, you know, really complex advanced training that we've never done before might be really hard for your adolescent dog. And things like working in high distraction environments can be really hard for our adolescent dogs. So focus on really good foundations and basics, and don't be upset when your dog suddenly seems like they forgot their name in every cue you've ever taught them. That is developmentally normal at this stage. And then the other thing I tell people is find something that you can do with your dog that you both love. I think that's one of the best ways that we can live happily with our adolescent dogs, because again, they're busy bodies. But also we want to make sure that they're getting positive enrichment. We want to make sure that we are, despite many of the struggles and frustrations that come with an adolescent dog, we want to remind ourselves of why we got the dog, and that in building that positive relationship through a shared activity. So for me and my dog, it was hiking. I love being in the woods with my dog. We did a lot of that. But I don't know, maybe you like to go paddle boarding, right? Or maybe you might be really into training tricks. Fitness training is something I do with my dogs a lot, both of us. And maybe you want to get into dog sports, right? Maybe you want to do something like rally, right? Or nose work. If it's a physically appropriate and you're a vet says it's okay, you could go running with your dog if you're a jogger, if you're a runner. One of my clients likes to cook with her dog, so she makes food for him. You know how when you were a kid you would bake cookies with your mom and she'd let you like lick the bowl and the spoon and stuff? She basically does that with her dog. Every week when she goes to prep her like Kongs and stuff, she likes to not just, you know, throw some wet food on there. She makes a little concoction for the dog and he gets to sit there on his mat and she gives him little things like he can lick the bowl and the spoon and he can taste test the ingredients. So I don't know, be creative. Think about the stuff you love. Try to find some shared activities that you can do with your dog and that you guys can both have a good time together. I think that goes a long way to making the adolescent period a little less frustrating and more enjoyable.
Thank you, Sammy, for joining me today. You did an amazing job recapping, but my biggest takeaways are management is key for everybody's success. And the idea to find something you can do with your dog that you both enjoy, it's such a great way to make this time period more enjoyable for both of you. Good luck with your teenagers, listeners, and remember, this too shall pass. Thank you for stopping by the dojo to learn with me this week. This is your aspiring sensei, Susan Light, signing off. You can find me at www.doggydojopodcast.com, or I'm Susan Light LA on Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook. The music was written by Mac Light. You can find him at maclightsongwriter.com. If you like the show, you can support it by subscribing, sharing it with your friends, rating it, and reviewing on Apple Podcasts. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode of the Doggy Dojo.